Okay, so last week we spoke about the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh and who has a right to argue on who. So last week we began the discussion with the sources that the Gemara seems to tell us, which is that later generations have more chachma than previous generations. But at the same time we know that the Gemara tells us in other places, previous generations were much greater than future generations. And this was a major question: how do we deal with Tanaim and Amoraim, with Rishonim and Achronim? And we began last week by talking about the discussion about Amoraim arguing on Tanoim, and we came to the conclusion, like the Kesef Mishnah writes, that it seems that everybody just took it upon themselves, that they weren't going to disagree with what the Tanoim had said, even though it could be that they may have been greater Chachamim, but they took it upon themselves as a Kabbalah, a understood rule of that generation, that no one was going to disagree. Turn to page Zion, which is where we left off last time. And let's just continue with 2 points on this last issue before we go further. Well, number one is, you'll read it on your own, everyone can keep these pamphlets, but number one is what the Chazon Ish writes in the Igros. And there he says something which I think is a very profound statement. And he says, Ha'emes Bazeh, it's the third paragraph on page Zayin. Right, it says on the bottom of the page Zayin. Aval Ha'emes Bazeh, he says, the truth about all of this, Tanoim and Amoraim disagreeing, is Shadar Achar HaMishnah Ro Es Miyad HaLevavos Neged Balei HaMishnah. They saw that they were not as great as those who were the Tanoim. V'yadu LaVetach Sheha'emes La'olam Min HaRishonim. They knew that the truth must be with those who were greater than they were. V'achar Sheyadu Amitas HaDavar She'efsher She'asigu Heim Ha'emes Mashalo Hisig Echad Min HaTanoim. So he takes an approach that the reason why Amoraim didn't argue on the Rishonim is because in the end of the day, the reason why we're all learning is because we want to get to the ultimate truth of Torah. If you believe that everything they said was truthful, then how can you argue on them? So he says it's not, they didn't have to take upon themselves that they weren't going to argue, it's just obvious. If we're all looking for Amita Shel Torah, if in the end of the day we're all looking for the truth, and we believe that the Tanoim had the truth, how can we argue on them? So that the Chazon Ish develops that theme here in this paragraph, but go down to the next paragraph where he has another letter and he writes, V'hineni shav le'emuna hapshuta b'Torah Shebaal Peh. He says, I'm going to give you the bottom line about how the Torah Shebaal Peh works, and that is, Eineni nichnas lahashiv mipnei ma. I'm not going to explain why this is so. Rak ritzoni lios ki Yisrael hedyot hamesaper masha kibil. I'm not here to give you reasons and interpretations. I'm just going to tell you the Mesorah that I have from my father, from my Rabbeim, to explain how the Torah Shebaal Peh works. V'hu, and that is the following. She'en koach b'shum chacham mechachme ha-Torah achar chasimas ha-Mishnah. Once the Mishnah was completed, no chacham, no matter how great you are, has the right to argue on a Mishnah. V'en shum chacham mechachme ha-Torah b'shuso lachluk al Talmud achar chasimas ha-Talmud. So that is the understanding that we work off of. We have a Mishnah which stays as a Mishnah. We have a Gemara that stays as the Gemara. And even though we have great Talmid Chachamim in our generation and throughout all the millennia, they don't have a right to argue on Mishnayis or on Gemaras. Now the question is, turn to page Ches, the bottom of the page. This discussion did not end with Tanoim and Amoraim. This discussion continued to linger on, and it was once again brought up with regard to our approach with Rishonim and Gaonim. Gaonim, as we know, came right after the end of the period of the Amoraim, and then after that came the Rishonim. The Rishonim is basically Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam and the Rif and the Rush. All of the Mefarshim on the Gemara that we normally read are written by the Rishonim. And here, the Rush gets into discussion about whether or not a Rishon, the Rush was one of the Rishonim, whether or not a Rishon has a right to argue on the word of the Gaonim. So let's see what he says. Hinei HaRush b'Mesecha Sanhedrin. The Rush in Sanhedrin, Hevi es Divrei HaRaivid. He quotes the Raivid who says, T'kol mi shecholek al Divrei HaGaonim. The Raivid is quoted as saying, anybody who argues on the word of the Gaonim, have a Toa Bidvar Mishnah. What does it mean to be a Toa Bidvar Mishnah? Toa Bidvar Mishnah is a concept the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah talks about. So the Gemara says, Chacham that makes a Psak. You go to a Talmud Chacham, and he gives a Psak, and it turns out he made a mistake. So if it's just a mistake about whether or not my chicken was kosher or treif, okay, so it's a $5 mistake, no big deal, right? Okay, he'll come later on, he has to be honest, say he made a mistake. People make mistakes, that's what happens. But what happens when you have a Chacham who makes a mistake? That's a very consequential mistake, and it costs somebody a lot of money. So how do you deal with that kind of mistake? Who has to pay? Do you say that the Chacham now has to pay? Let's say it's a few million dollars of a mistake. Let's say you have a factory, a company nowadays that has some kashrus question. Chacham makes a major mistake. So The Gemara says it depends. If he's a Toa B'dvar Mishnah, is one thing. If he makes a mistake because he was Toa B'shikul Adas, he's putting all the factors together, based on all of the factors that he thought were involved, he thought the Psak should be like this, and it turns out he missed one factor, and that's why the Psak is going to be in a different way. So then that's not his fault. Look, everybody makes mistakes. Every person is a human being. However, if he's a Toa B'dvar Mishnah, what if he just forgot a Mishnah? He forgot something that was so obvious that he should have known. So that was his own negligence. So the Gemara says in that case, he might be held responsible. Over here, the Ravid says, anybody who argues on the Gaonim, somebody I'm leaving in the time of the Rishonim, and I come along and I give a psak, and it's against something that one of the Gaonim said, writes the Ravid, have a toa b'dvar Mishnah. That's like you're giving a psak, that's against the Mishnah. So it's your fault, you're negligent. How did you forget about that? How did you not know about it? Not only that, writes the Ravid, not only if you give a psak against one of the Gaonim that you were not aware of, but if you give a psak against one of the Gaonim and you knew that the Gaonim said not like you, but you chose to disagree with them, Ein lanu ata lachlok al divrei hagon meirayis daitenu lefari sha'inim b'derach acher. Writes the Ravid, the same regard that the Amoraim had for the Tanaim is the regard that the Rishonim had for the Gaonim. And they said, once the Mishnayos were sealed, they were sealed. Once the Gemara was sealed, it was over. And once the period of the Gaonim was over, whatever they said, we stick by and that's it. We don't have a right to disagree with them, and we cannot disregard. Kedeshi yishtana hadin midivrei Hagon, he says, Zeu davar she'ein nimtza. This is something we do not find. It is completely unacceptable. We don't have a right to argue on them. And the Rush finds this to be something that is impossible. The Rush says, how can that be?
Yeah. Well, you know, but a lot of times in the Gemara, where a Gemara questions the Mishnayos, questions the Mishnah,
right,
or disagrees with the Mishnah, it's not as if, you know, the Tanaim or the Amoraim didn't disagree with each other. There's a lot of fighting going on.
So there's a lot of fighting between Amoraim. There's a lot of fighting between Tanaim. We do not find that an Amora in the Gemara disagrees with the Mishnah. So much so that when an Amora says something and it seems to be against the Mishnah, the Gemara will say, we have a Mishnah that's not like you. So the Amora should respond, what do I care? So there's a Mishnah not like me. But that's never the answer he gives. We have to stand on our heads to find, no, maybe he meant this or he meant that, or there's another Tana who says like him somewhere else that you didn't think of. But without that, the Gemara seems to believe that that's a major problem. You cannot have an Amora say something that is against an explicit line in a Mishnah. So that seems to be the rule that they were working off of. And here, writes the Ravid, that same rule worked with regard to the Gaonim and the Rishonim. However, the Rush challenges that opinion and he says he doesn't believe it's true. Turn to the next page, page Tes. V'harash chalak al ha-Ravid v'kasav. The Rush disagrees and he believes. D'yiftach b'doro kishmul b'doro. Every generation has its own set of Tamine Chachamim. V'ein l'chay l'shofet shabi amecha. And we go based on the knowledge and the chachma of the greats of our generation. Ki kal hadvarim she'ena muvu'arim b'shas shasider of Ashi v'ravina. The Rush argues that anything that is not found in the Gemara proper, Adam yachal lister v'livnos afilu lachlok al divrei ha-Gaonim. Says the Rush, why don't I have a right? So you might have to be the Rush to disagree with the Gaonim. Many of us, I would hope, don't consider ourselves to be like the Rush. Many people in our generation maybe do, but I hope those in the room understand that we don't. So the Rush says, I don't understand. This is not something that's found in the Gemara. It's not something that's found in Ravina and Ravashi's Gemara that they published, and therefore we have every right to disagree on the Gaonim the same way we have a right to disagree with the Rambam and the Ran and many others. So that's the opinion of the Rush, which again is fascinating because you find here that once again they had this disagreement. What is the status of ourselves versus those who came before us? Vitarti shamina midivrei ha-Rush. We see two things from what the Rush quotes. Number one, Bar Hadavar, it's clear from what he says, She'em biyad adam lachlok al hashas, she'sidur ravina ravashi. The Rush takes it for granted that no one's allowed to argue in the Gemara. He just says, that's only the Gemara, but when it comes to the Gaonim, then we have a right to disagree. That's premise number one. No one's allowed to argue on the Gemara. Number two, he says, the Acher Chasimas HaTalmud, once they finish writing the Gemara, Yesh Biyad HaAchronim Lachlok Al Kadmehem, V'afilu Lister Divrei HaGaonim. The Rush says, this is something that is unique to the time period of the Gaonim, to the time period of the Tanam and Amoraim, but once that period was over, it's all open playing field. Everyone has a right to disagree with anybody else. Everyone can share their opinions. Everyone can share their views. And there's no problem at all. V'yadua. And he says, it is well known, Shebe'inyin zeh nechleku adeos ben chachmei svarad vechachmei ashkenaz. This became a major point of disagreement as to what is the status of the Gaonim. Uva'od gedolei svarad v'rosham haramban shamu as divrei ha-Gaonim atar v'rosham. The Ramban always quotes the Gaonim and he says, whatever they say is divrei Kabbalah, whatever they say we have to accept. V'nimnu milach l'kaleim. The Ramban himself was not comfortable disagreeing with them. However, gedolei ashkenaz, when I came to the Balei Atosos who were in Germany, the more Ashkenazic Rishonim, Balei Atosos v'Arash, lo nichnu lepiskei ha-Gaonim. They didn't always agree with what the Gaonim said, and they said, we have a right to disagree with them because this is not a Gemara that we're disagreeing with, it's not a Mishnah, and therefore we feel that we have the position, and we have the right, and we have the Chachma to disagree with the Gaonim, although they may have been much greater than we are. So let's see the next discussion, which is about, fascinating, the Gemara discusses, do Tanaim have a right to disagree with Nevi'im? So we always look at Nevi'im as, oh, the Navi, right? So think about it. Mordechai HaTzadik was a Navi? Yes or no? He had Nevuah, right? He was a Navi. Esther Amalka, they had Nevuah, right? There was something going on. And they were part of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, right? The Gemara tells us, Ratzli L'Rov Echav means, after he was Pirish, after he got involved in politics, most of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola didn't like him anymore because they said, oh, he's a politician. Ah, he was Mordechai HaTzadik, the hero of the whole story, doesn't matter. But he was at the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. That was at the time of the Tanaim. So very often we think about the Nevi'im and we say, wow, they lived in a generation a very long time ago, but it's not really true. There were some Nevi'im that lived a long time ago. There were others who lived around the time of the Tanaim. And the question here is, do we assume that a Tana has a right to disagree with a Navi or not? Now, this does not mean that a Tana can ever go against a Pasuk that we find written explicitly in the Navi. That is certainly off limits. There's no question about it. You wouldn't be allowed to disagree with a Nevuah that is stated in one of the Sifrei HaTanakh. The only question is, sometimes a Navi gave his opinion, and the Navi was not sharing a Nevuah that was nitan ledoros. He was not sharing a Nevuah that was going to be written down in Tanakh. So the question is, do we have a right to disagree with his opinion or not? So let's see. Kayotze b'chalan al yesh la'ayin, we have to think about. Em yesh b'koach ha-Tanaim lachlok al ha-Navim. Do the Tanaim have a right to disagree with the Nevi'im? Ve'en kavanoseinu, and we don't mean to say, b'mashenemar b'nevuah v'kalo b'sifrei ha-Navim v'aksuvim, we don't mean to say, does a Tana have a right to disagree with something that's in Tanakh? Of course not. No one's allowed to tamper with any pasuk in Chumash or any pasuk in Nach at all. All he's referring to here is every once in a while in the Gemara you find Shanavim chidshu halachas midaitim usvarasam. Sometimes the Navim came up with their own halacha. For example, Hinei Mesechas Becharos, the Gemara Becharos Daf Nun Zayin writes that nechleku atanoim, the Tanoim have a disagreement im Rosh Hashanah l'maiser behema be'echad betishrei or be'echad be'el. The Gemara says we're not sure when the count of maiser behema is. You have to do maiser behema every year, which means you have to take in all the animals that were born this year and you have to take off a tenth of those animals and give them to as maiser. And the question is, the Gemara tells us you're not allowed to give mishana zu achaverta. You're not allowed to give some animals from this year that might be from last year's crop or from next year's for this year's. So therefore, you have to make sure that you only get in the ones that were born in the past year. So the question here is, how do you define what is the past year? Do you say it's Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah? Do you say it's Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat? That's Rosh Hashanah Lilana, so it probably has nothing to do with this. So the Gemara says, we're not really sure. Is the Rosh Hashanah for Ma'aseh Behema Be'echad B'Tishrei? Or is it Be'echad Be'elul? The Gemara is not sure about this. And the Gemara there says in Nun Chesam and Aleph, Tanya, Amar Ben Azai. Ben Azai said, commenting on this machlokes hatanoim, whether the Rosh Hashanah for Maiser Behema is on Echad B'Tishrei or Echad Be'elul, says the Gemara Ben Azai commented, Holol v'halalu amrim kach. Since some tanoim say that it's Echad B'Tishrei, v'halalu amrim kach, and some say that it's on Echad Be'elul, he'elulin misasrim li'atzman. All the animals that are born in that month have to be taken Maiser on their own. Why? Because we're not sure, and I don't want to get involved in this disagreement, in this machlokas, whether we count the years starting Elul or we count the years starting Tishrei. Ask the Gemara of Alechsi, time of Deman Mestaver. What do you mean? Every time we have a machlokas and we don't know which way to go, we'll try to figure out which one makes more sense. So why don't you look at the arguments of Echad Be'elul, look at the arguments of Echad Be'Tishrei, and determine whether or not you feel this one is right or that one's right. V'chitema, and maybe he'll say, L'matzi kaya tamayu, maybe he'll tell me, says the Gemara, that Ben Azai couldn't figure out who made more sense. And therefore he says, because I don't know who's right, therefore I'm going to decide that we'll just treat it like a suffik. Says the Gemara v'hatanya, don't we know, Ben Azai omer, kol chachmei Yisrael domen alai keklipas hashum. Ben Azai was able to put everyone in his back pocket. So if Ben Azai was so great, he was able to put everyone in his back pocket, he could outsmart them all. How could he not figure out the pshat in the Mishnah? How could he not figure out whether it's Echa be'elul, Echa be'tishrei? So much so that he had to say in the end, we have to be machmir and treat it like a suffik. I don't know what to do. What do you mean? You're Ben Azai. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mipi hashmua amruha. Mipi chagai zechariah malachi. The problem here is, this is not an ordinary machlokas atanoim. This is, some tanoim say, we heard from chagai zechariah malachi that it's Echa be'tishrei. And you have another group of tanoim that are saying, we heard from Chagas Chayim Alachi that it's Echa Be'elo. So because it's a suffix, what the Nevi'im said, therefore Ben Azai says, as smart as I am, I don't want to get involved in the Machlokas. Because here I might be stepping on the toes of Chagas Chayim Alachi, who were the last of the Nevi'im, and therefore he writes, I don't feel that I'm great enough to be involved in this disagreement. Writes, so here he continues, Hareilan, don't we see from here? De'av she'ben Azai haya charif me'ein kamoso. Even though Ben Azai, we know, was such an incredible personality, he was such a charuf, and he had the ability to disagree with all the greats of his generation, still, he still felt that we have to draw a line. I'm allowed to argue with everyone in my generation, but I would never argue on a Navi. I could be the great Ben Azai. I could be the one who's Tarasu Humnasu. The Gemara says Ben Azai never got married because he was so engrossed in learning, and Itaka was a great Talmud Chacham, but there was a limit to his Chachma, and he felt he didn't have a right to argue on the Nevi'im. So that's what you see from here, which I think is a very important point as well. So turn to the next page. I see we don't have enough time, so let's just keep moving. And let's go to the next part, which is, if the Achronim have a right to argue on the Rishonim. So this discussion continues. As I said before, the Achronim, when we talk about Achronim, that doesn't mean us. My father always says to me that our generation is the Tachtonim. We're the underwear. The Achronim are the people who are under the Rishonim. We're not even that. We're not even that. So the discussion there that we're having is, do Achronim, classical Achronim, the Ktos HaChoshen and the Nesivos, do they have a right to disagree with those who came before them or not? So let's see what they write. At the end of the generation of the Rishonim, they had a disagreement. They had a disagreement. Will future generations be able or have the right to argue on us or not? Yes, it's true, the Gemara says. When you have a disagreement between Amoraim, we say, Hilchasa kebatsroi, whichever Amora came later, we assume he knew everything that came before him, and more, and therefore whatever he said is right. That's the assumption the Gemara gives. Hilchasa kebatsroi, the halacha is like the one who came later. However, over here, when it comes to one of the Achronim who disagrees on a Rishon, will you say Hilchasa kebatsroi? Will you say we accept the Achron over the Rishon because he came last? He came afterward? Says the Maharam, absolutely not. So this is what he writes. Va'od, al karchach. Lo amru hilchusa kebasroi legabi kamoi. This doesn't mean when we say in the Gemara hilchusa kebasroi, the halach is like he who came last. That doesn't mean that the Achronim have a right to outweigh what the Rishonim said. Ella, what it means is kishein bein basroi lekamoi. Ella kehadragas amurai kamoi lamurai basroi. The generation of Amoraim went on for hundreds of years, and therefore he writes when we say hilchusa kebasroi, it means one of the later Amoraim that says the halacha is X, we trust him more than one of the early Amoraim that says the halacha is Y. However, he writes, Aval hecha deika beinayu, but when you have such a discrepancy, kadraga shebein Amoraim letanai, when you have this distinction, like the difference between Tanaim and Amoraim, in such a case, lo amru, that's not where we say it. And so too over here, he writes, we don't have a right for Achronim to disagree on the Rishonim, and therefore he says the Ma'arik was totally inappropriate for disagreeing on the Rishonim. He didn't think it was right at all. Turn to the next page, Yud Aleph. V'kach gam medoros ha'achronim. Final page. And so do we find in the Achronim, Ta'av sherov gedolei ha'achronim. Nimnu milach lok ala Rishonim, even though the Achronim held back from disagreeing on the Rishonim, Hayu migdolei hagdolim shelo nimnu. There were some along the way who felt that they do have the right to disagree on the Rishonim. So it's not like there was a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai that said no one's allowed to ever argue on a previous generation. It depends who you are. Now, if you just have, my father likes to say, Rabbi Tom, Rabbi Dick, Rabbi Harry, just get together and make a bezin and decide, we're going to argue on the whole world, we're going to do whatever we want, we're going to make a psak, even though no one in our generation agrees with it. Okay, that's something that is illegitimate. That's something we don't trust. You have to be somebody who's of the league to even be in the conversation in the first place. If you don't even get off the ground to be in the conversation, then you don't even get started. Then your opinion doesn't even count. We don't even have to listen to you. We don't even have to argue with you. Right? We don't even have to validate your opinion because it's so worthless. But if you're somebody who really has, we're not saying people are worthless, but sometimes opinions of people are worthless because they don't have enough of a background in the system of halacha and how it works and all of the sources to really have an opinion on such an important matter. And over here he writes, yes, it's true along the way, there were some great individuals who disagreed on the Rishonim, but by and large, this was something that generally was not done unless you were the Vilna Gaon or the Shagas Aryeh or the Maharshal, some of the leaders of their generations, but regular people generally tried not to do that. Now, we get out of the Tkufas HaRishonim.
What gave them that right?
Who? So that's an interesting question. It's an interesting question because, you know, how do you look at the Vilna Gaon? If you look at this last line before the next paragraph, the Chazon Ish writes in Orach Chaim, when he's commenting about the Vilna Gaon and how the Vilna Gaon takes on Rishonim left and right, he has no problem. The Vilna Gaon was considered like one of the Rishonim, asher nitin lo rishus lachlok al Rishonim. Writes the Chazon Ish, wherever that comes from, the Vilna Gaon had the right to disagree on the Rishonim, even though no one else in his generation would dare to do that. But the Vilna Gaon, we assume, was the Vilna Gaon. So I believe in every generation you have a personality like that. Now, people misunderstand that to mean that, oh, if the Vilna Gaon disagreed on the Rishonim, I can also disagree on the Rishonim. And if Ramosha Feinstein made a psak that was an earth-shattering psak, I also have a right to make an earth-shattering psak. Well, Ramosha Feinstein was Ramosha Feinstein. And we are not. And the Vilna Gaon was the Vilna Gaon. And we also are not the Vilna Gaon. So this is something one has to be very concerned about, because very often this gets lost in transmission. People think, well, just because you see in certain sources that they disagree on earlier sources, that means we all have the right to do that. That is not the case. The Vilna Gaon didn't start disagreeing on the Rishonim until he became the Vilna Gaon. Only then did he think about challenging some of the Rishonim. So let's look at the Shulchan Aruch. And this, I think, is also a very important question, because what happened? How did the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah become the bottom line for everybody? Who decided that they're the bottom line? Right? If you have someone today who gets up and disagrees with the Psak and Shulchan Aruch, he'll say, what is he, out of his mind? How can he do such a thing? I'll be covers, I'll throw him out of shul. How can we do that? Right? Why should that be the case? Whoever said that the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah are the bottom line? So let's look. Misha Aruch Maran Abes Yosef HaShulchano. Once the Shulchan Aruch set his table, V'harama Paras Ala V'Samapa, and the Ramah spread across that table his tablecloth, meaning you have the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Kol Yisrael Mishulchan Gavah HaMilchan. So he uses poetic license here and he says, now once they set the table and we have this beautiful artistry with the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah's commentary, then all of Klal Yisrael are bound by what they said. V'hadorah shel achareim kiblu es devareim lelo orim. And he says we find that nobody disagreed with the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Not only in future generations did they not disagree, but in their generation themselves, everyone accepted the Psakim of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Af gedol Yisrael shahi b'dara samach l'dara shel Abbeis Yosef nichnu b'fanav. Even those who were alive at the time of the Ramah and the Beis Yosef also accepted their opinion. Ayin b'tshuvas temach tzedek u'b'tshuvas avodas hagershuni shahi kemat b'nei doru. They were almost in the same time as the Beis Yosef himself with Kasva, and they write teha porish mishulchan Aruch keporish menachayim. That someone who deviates from what it says in Shulchan Aruch is as if they're deviating from the source of life, because the Shulchan Aruch was accepted as what everybody was going to live life by. Ach mikol makom. However, lo nimnu lifamim lachlok al dvar berayos. He says, every so often you find that there were those who disagreed on the Shulchan Aruch as well. And you look in the Mishnah Berurah every so often. Like this week, I was giving a shiur about the Malacha of Choresh. I don't know if anyone here listened to the shiur, but in the Malach of Choresh, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah gives a psak that you're not allowed to sweep a floor even if the floor is made of tiles. You're not allowed to sweep a floor on Shabbos even if a floor is made of tiles. Why? What can possibly be the problem? Well, says the Rama, we make a gzera. What do you call tiles in Hebrew? Tiles, utter non-tiles. I forgot what it's called. But the Rama says, the reason why we asur you from sweeping the floor, even if it's a tile, a marble floor, is because we're concerned maybe you're going to make the mistake and you're going to sweep a floor that was not made of tiles. And if you sweep a floor that's made of dirt, then you're going to violate the Malach of Chorish because you're going to flatten out the earth. Fine, that's what the Rama says. Comes along the Mishnah Berurah, and the Mishnah Berurah writes, well, maybe that was in the days of the Rama, where some people had homes that were made of tiles and other people had homes that were made of dirt. But nowadays, where nobody has homes that are made of dirt anymore, there's no such thing. We've never been to a home that's made of dirt floors. Therefore, writes the Mishnah Berurah, the whole psak of the Rama doesn't apply anymore. Wow. It's pretty amazing. Would you call the Mishnah Berurah a reform rabbi? No. But the Mishnah Berurah came along, he just did away with the whole psak in the Rama. Okay, so he said, under these circumstances, the Rama never meant to give his psak. It takes tremendous shoulders for somebody to do that. And if you're an avid reader of the Mishnah Berurah, you'll notice many people think that the Mishnah Berurah is just commenting on the Shulchan Aruch. He's not at all. Very often he reverses the psak that has been the accepted psak for many, many centuries, and the Mishnah Berurah changes what everybody always assumed to be the psak, yeah? What? No, Ariach is not what they use here. What? No, Ariach, sometimes the Gemara uses to mean a brick. But a tile is not, that we don't refer to it as an Ariach. I forgot the way it's referred to already. I just spoke about it this week. Okay, Chazara is very important. Anyway, so you see that every so often we have opportunities that the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama themselves are not accepted as the bottom line, even though generally they are considered to be the bottom line halacha that we usually follow. Now, here's a very interesting issue. If you look at the single page that I give out, what do you do when there's a stira between the Beis Yosef himself and the Shulchan Aruch? So both of them are written by the Beis Yosef. Both of them are written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. The first edition was the Beis Yosef, and then he summed it all up and he wanted to write something more concise, so he writes the Shulchan Aruch. So what do? Every so often you have something where there's a discrepancy between what he writes over here and what he writes over there. I hope people are appreciating this, I find this whole pamphlet really could not have been written by so many other people. You need somebody who's enough of a master in all of Shulchan Aruch and Beis Yosef and in the Rishonim and Achronim to bring all the proofs that are brought here. So I hope you appreciate what this is all about. If you want the full version, anyone can email me, I can send you. It's about 30, 40 pages about this whole issue and about different things. I think they're all very fascinating. I actually asked him when he's coming for Shabbos to talk on Friday night about issues of Mesorah, not so much about the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh, but more about, I think, our generation grapples a lot with where Mesorah fits into the picture. So that's something you can look forward to. Rav Asher Weiss is coming for Shabbos, the first Shabbos in January. I hope everybody will participate. But here he discusses, what about the stira? My father's coming for Shabbos Chanukah next week. We're having an oneg both of those weeks. The oneg with my father is going to be in the house, only because I don't want to make him walk in the cold. Yes, Rav Asher Weiss is a little younger, so we'll make him walk to shul. And the oneg is going to be in the shul, but everyone is welcome to join both of those. So what about when you have a stira between the Beis Yosef himself and what he writes in Shulchan Aruch? He says, Be'emes, the truth is, Niskashisi v'nischabatati b'she'ela zuz manrav. He says, I've been bothered by this question for the longest time. Uvetshuvasi tzarech ani laharech tzas b'darke apsak v'hahara. He says here, you have to really give an overview of general psak and how it works in order to really understand what do you do when you have something that the Beis Yosef writes in one place and then the Shulchan Aruch writes something else. He says, v'harbi mekomos matzinu keyotzi b'zeh. We find many places where the Beis Yosef himself does not write like he himself wrote in his other commentary. Number one, v'hilchos Shabbos simin shin tes zayin and hilchos Shabbos hevi abeis Yosef es dasa machmirim. The Beis Yosef quotes from the machmirim she'asar lizgar teva de'efshor sheyesh ba zivuvim mishum alechas seda. Let's say you have a big box and you're not sure, did a fly just fly into that or not? Right, the Beis Yosef, if you're not sure about it, you're not allowed to close it. Why? Because maybe you're violating the malacha of tzeda. If you close it, there happens to be a fly in it, you're going to violate the malacha. And he says, below hevi shita zu, in Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't quote this opinion of the machmirim at all, the ha'amah kasav lahakel. So what do we do with that? On the one hand, in the Beis Yosef, he writes, there are those who are machmir, and it makes sense. In Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't quote it at all. Number beis, behilchas malicha, which no one really learns nowadays, because who salts any meat today? So nobody really learns Hilchas Malicha. We should. But anyway, in Hilchas Malicha, I guess Rav Asher Weiss learns it, it says over there, Lagabi Basar Shenimlach Lelo Hadacha Kamaisa. Let's say you go and you salt meat without first rinsing it off. So first you have to rinse it off to get all the blood off. Whatever is the residual blood left after the rinsing, then the salt will be able to take that out. So what if I salted it without doing the original rinsing? Kasava Beis Yosef, Deyesh Lahatur B'dievet B'makom Hefsid Meruba. He says, if it's a Hefsid Meruba, like there's a big chunk of meat and it costs a lot of money, or it's Erev Shabbos or Letzarech Archim, if it's extenuating circumstances, you have a right to be mekel and use the meat. Ach B'Shulchan Aruch, Kasav B'Stamash B'dievet Mutter. V'lo Hisna Hatera Da B'Hefsid Meruba. In Shulchan Aruch, he says it's Mutter. He doesn't say it's only Mutter where it's a Hefsid Meruba. So is the Shulchan Aruch relying on the fact that he assumes everybody read what he said in the Beis Yosef, and this is just the cliff notes? So he didn't want to write too long. So he just wrote, oh, it's Mutter. But he understands that you know what he wrote over there, that it's perhaps in Meruba, which obviously none of us know. Or is the Beis Yosef changing his opinion from what he wrote there, that it's only Mutter, perhaps in Meruba, and here he's saying it's Mutter, l'chala deus, it's Mutter in every circumstance, in every situation. So here's the problem. He says we have many places where we find this. And we have to figure out how do we deal with the Shulchan Aruch when he has all these discrepancies? He says, there are two people, two major approaches that deal with this issue. Skip down a paragraph. Petshuvas Yosef Ometz Kasav. And the Yosef Ometz, he writes, Dekasher Hishmit Maran Min HaShulchan Aruch Halacha Shekasav BeBeis Yosef. When the Shulchan Aruch leaves something out from what he wrote in the Beis Yosef, Ein Zah BeHechreach Mishum Shechazer Bo. That doesn't mean that he doesn't really believe that that's true. Ella Efsher, it could be de Afsha Achin Halacha Psukei Mikal Malka Mishmita Min HaShulchan Aruch Misham Shalosh Sivos. There might be three reasons why he left it out from the pages of Shulchan Aruch. Number one, Mishum Shalacha Psutei, either because he believes that it's so obvious, and anybody should have known that, so I don't even have to write it. Which, come on, we're such amaratzim today, how are we supposed to know that? None of us read the Beis Yosef line by line, not everybody reads it. So he says, number one is either he left it out because everybody knows that. Skip down. Number bays, maybe the reason why, two lines before the end, Mishum, Davi Milsa de lo Shchicha, because it's so unusual. So in the Beis Yosef, he wrote the expanded version, and he brings in every possibility, every case. But when he gets down to the bottom line, Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't have so much room, so he doesn't leave out the strange cases. He assumes when the strange case comes up, then you'll go back to the source, and you'll find out what it really says. That's option number two, why he leaves something out. Option number three is Mishum Shiyesh Lilmod Halacha Zu Mehalacha Acheres Haksuva B'Shulchan Aruch B'Makam Acher. Shulchan Aruch assumes, come on, you know the whole book by heart, and therefore, why do I have to write it here if I already wrote it somewhere else? One is in Yoredeya and one is in Choshen Mishpat. Nobody learns Evan HaEzer because when are you ever going to be Masada Reget? Never. But maybe the Shulchan Aruch is assuming that you're going to draw a comparison from somewhere else, and therefore he doesn't have to write it here. Now, I find all of these three reasons to be very problematic for members of our generation, because all three of them don't apply. Number one, we don't really know what he writes. As he says, halacha pshutahi, we don't know what's so pasha, we don't know anything. Number two, to say that he left it out because it's lo shchicha, nowadays we see every case comes up. Every crazy case that you never would have dreamed of somehow is popping up in our generation. Number three, the reason he writes why sometimes the Shulchan Aruch left things out is because he assumes that you're going to know it from somewhere else. Come on, how many people here know all Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch? Happens to be Ari Bergman, who gives a shiur here on Matzoi Shabbos. For anyone who hasn't been there before, he's a very fascinating personality. So he has a lot of amazing kisvei out in his house. One of the things that he has is an original copy of the Turin Shulchan Aruch. He has an original copy before they had all the commentaries on the side. And it's amazing in there. You see that the original way the Shulchan Aruch was written was that you're supposed to finish the entire Shulchan Aruch once a month. And you see in there, written in there, the Mechaber himself wrote days of the month where he split up the study of Shulchan Aruch in a way that you should be able to finish it once a month. Like, you know, the Lubavitchers learn Tanya once a month or once, I don't know, once a year. I don't know exactly how they split it up. And some people read Tehillim once a month or once a week. So too, the Beis Yosef split up his commentary that it was supposed to be studied once a month. So if you are going along with the plan, says the Beis Yosef, what's the problem? You're going to know it inside out because you're doing it every month, so you shouldn't have any issue. Just because I left it out here, of course you're going to know it from Chosh HaMishpat, because in another 10 days you're going to get there. Or you just learned it last week. But for those of us who unfortunately don't follow the plan and we don't go along with what the Beis Yosef had in mind, we might be stuck with an issue here. B'machzik bracha liyaradeya. The Chida writes, Shehu Navuch Lahavin, that he's at a loss to understand Masha Matzina Bekama Mekamos Shenichtevu Bebeis Yosef Hushmetu Min HaShulchan Aruch. He says, He has a hard time really understanding what's going on here. How can we find so many discrepancies between what he writes in the Beis Yosef and what he writes in the Shulchan Aruch? Says the Chidah. Bottom line is, if we find a stira between the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, yesh lahaniach shechazer bo marim mimashikasa beBeis Yosef. It must be that he doesn't agree with what he wrote earlier. Halacha kabasroi. If he wrote a sefer that came later, it means that was the bottom line and that was the way he believed. Whatever, so he says these are the basic two approaches that are quoted in the Acharonim. Either, no, everything that he says in the Beis Yosef fits with what he said in Shulchan Aruch. Just there are reasons why he left certain things out. Or the second approach is, the reason why there's a stira is because he was chozer, because he retracted from that which he wrote originally in the Beis Yosef, which I think makes a lot of sense. Sometimes the Beis Yosef quotes many, many opinions in the Rishonim, and later on he narrowed it down and he said, this is the opinion I believe in, and this is the opinion I don't accept. So this is a very important discussion, and you look, again, I gave this to you so that everyone can study it on their own. We don't have enough time now, we have to stop for Ma'ariv, but I think this is a very important issue, because every so often you come across a halacha where there really is not such clarity about what exactly the Shulchan Aruch himself believes. On the one hand, you look in the Beis Yosef, if you have enough patience to do that, you'll see that the Beis Yosef writes one thing, and then sometimes you look in the Shulchan Aruch and you'll see that he writes something else. And that can be very confusing. Sometimes the halacha can be very confusing until you figure out how the system works. And that's why the Acharonim here are trying to figure out, how do we handle sometimes when we have a major discrepancy between what is listed in the Shulchan Aruch and what perhaps might have been written a little bit earlier in the Beis Yosef himself. Yeah.